You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Bayer. Here is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's Jeff Bayer. Welcome to one and all to our little internet program.
Brought to you fantastically by OneOfUs.net.
That's right. We were at Fantastic Fest, had a great time. Now we're both back. We survived. Mm-hmm. You had a kind of a bad haircut for a while, but now you've...
I did.
You've got that I dealt with.
Almost have a buzz. It's almost a buzz cut.
Almost
Is it a buzz cut?
Not quite a buzz cut.
Really close.
It is very short. It doesn't look bad. You don't have like an oddly shaped head or anything.
No.
I mean it's huge, but it's like it's a normal shape.
Have you ever seen somebody with like brain skull?
There was that guy that we used to call Brain Skull that was always at the movies, the screening rat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, yeah.
Where the back of his head looked like his brain
just
was bulging
brain.
Out.
Yeah. Like it's got like hills and valleys and
when
knobs.
when people have folds, they've got folds and ridges on the back of their neck. Yeah.
Not one of those.
No, you're not.
And that's nice. So anyway, and I'm attempting to grow my first beard in my life, and it's a struggle. I don't know how people do it.
You know, for most people who grow beards, it really doesn't take any work. It sort of comes naturally. When I've had a beard, I had a beard for many years, as you know, and I really didn't have to do anything.
I'm not equipped to think about facial hair. Like it's not with me. Like the best I've done is like, okay, shave Friday once a week, you'll get stubble, move on.
And see, and that's how I am with hair, because I had like 10, 11 years I didn't have hair. I buzzed my head. So now that I have hair again, I keep forgetting, oh, yeah, I got to deal with this. Like, I have to do this. I have to – something else I have to think about. I'd forgotten.
By the way, listeners, this is how Eric is just like desperate for the – Eric, did you just get a haircut? It looks very nice.
Oh, I did get a haircut. It actually doesn't look very nice. She did a bad
job
you don't this
think
time.
So?
Well, it's better now than it was right after.
Oh, okay.
She kind of messed up my bangs a little bit, I think.
Do you go to the same person every time, or do you not care?
No, I go to the same place down the street from my apartment. Okay. Vietnamese man named Tom. This time, Tom was busy, so his wife did it. And I'd seen her there before, but I always assumed she just did women's hair. I'd never seen her cut hair before.
Okay.
But then she did mine, and I was a little nervous, but then, sure enough, she screwed up the bangs. But it's all right. Because, again, I don't care that much. That's the other thing about my hair. I don't care very much.
Right. But now you're forced to a little bit.
Now
I have to at least
have some concern about it. Yes.
This is the thing with the beard. Now that I'm really attempting to do it, here's what I don't understand. I don't understand if I'm just supposed to let the hair that's now on my face get longer, and that's how coverage happens.
That's the gist of it.
Or do I not have enough like beard follicles to like really make a go of this, and it's just a lost cause, and I'm just going to look homeless? I don't know.
Well, you'll find out, won't you? That's the thing. That's the thing with growing a beard. Growing a beard doesn't really take – it doesn't take any maintenance. You're just letting it grow. And maybe you'll see that it doesn't grow in all the places, and then that way your decision's made for you.
Yeah. At least then I'll finally know. I'll finally know in like a month or two? Like I'll just officially know.
It'll be – if you're used to shaving once a week, is that seriously how often you shave?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yeah.
Well, no, but I don't have a baby face. Like, I just always have light stubble, right?
Yeah, very light stubble. I'm surprised you only shave once a week.
I mean, we have friends that, like, barely have to shave. I'm not a person that barely has to shave. I'm a person that chooses to shave once a week. If I wanted to look good, I would shave two or three times a week.
We also have friends who have to shave every day.
Yeah.
We have friends really who manly. Are much more manly than we are.
So much manly.
But enough of that. Let's get to the movies.
The Girl on the Train. Speaking of manly.
Choo-choo!
So this is a book that I think...
It shook the world. It shook the world. That's what the commercial said.
The commercial said it shook the world.
I don't remember that.
It might have swept the nation. I know my wife read it and was interested.
I would assume if it shook the world, it had to have swept the nation. I mean, just by definition.
I don't know if they go hand in hand.
Unless it shook the entire world except America, but that seems unlikely. It's not soccer.
So So here's what we got. We got a girl on the train. Mm-hmm. She daydreams. We know this because she tells us she has an overactive imagination.
She takes the train or her commute, and she always passes by the same houses, and she makes up stories about the people in them, kind of.
Yes. And after all of that is established by Emily Blunt's narration, I wrote down the word boring.
Oh, really?
I did. I don't think it's interesting for a character to guess about other characters' lives.
I think the idea of always passing these same people who are strangers to you, but you always see them so you feel like you know them, I think that's very fascinating.
I think in real life that can be fascinating at times. I don't think it translated, at least in the very beginning, it didn't translate until you find out she's a drunk.
Well,
and then
yeah.
There's a little something there.
Once somebody's a drunk, they're very interesting. And it turns out the whole thing of making up stories is kind of a misdirection anyway, because what's going on here, Rachel, that's Emily Blunt, the street that she passes by on the train, one house used to be her own house. It's where her ex-husband and his new wife live.
Mm-hmm.
And a house, I guess, a couple doors down or something, or across the street somehow.
Two doors down, I believe. I believe it's two doors.
That is the house where she sees the people that she makes up stories about them. The neighbors of her ex-husband. And that's Megan, Haley Bennett, and then Anna is the ex-husband's new wife. There's a lot of people to keep track of here. And it also kept – it would show us the people, and then it kept jumping back 6 months earlier or 4 months earlier. And the third time I was sighing. I was like, ugh, I can't keep track of this. Ah.
I heard you sigh, and I agreed with that sigh. And not only that, Megan and Anna kind of look alike, which kind of has to do a little bit with
the story.
Into the story,
but also at first made me.
At first, I was just like, oh, that's a different person. Got it.
Oh, you had trouble telling them apart?
Even I did.
I have trouble telling blonde women apart. I have it's Scandinavian blindness or something. And I think it, I honestly do think it, part of it is because I'm gay. I think my brain doesn't latch onto women's faces.
You're already disinterested.
Sort of, or not as interested in the same way. Or what I think it's a subconscious thing. But I seriously have problems telling blonde women. That's why I can't watch Fox News. As far as I know, Fox News has one anchor, 24 hours a day. But in fact, I guess it's actually like 10 different blonde women. Anyway, I'm glad that you also had trouble telling them.
I did. And so once I got everybody straight, I was just like, okay, got it. This is about people not getting over things, because she's not the only one that we get inside the head of.
Get inside all their heads, yeah.
With Megan's character, she's in therapy, so she's revealing more things. Anna slowly is revealing more things,
oh,
too,
that's
as the story goes along.
Megan, who is unhappily married to Luke Evans, who is an Orlando Bloom impersonator.
He's like somebody inflated Orlando Bloom just a little bit, because he's not his body's tight.
He's just bigger build than Orlando Bloom. Yeah.
Right.
And so Megan married to him, and she's working as a nanny for Anna. And everyone's got problems. Everyone's miserable. This is a movie about people being mistrustful of each other. And then somebody dies. Somebody dies.
Right.
Or perhaps they were murdered.
And Rachel isn't the somebody who died, but something happened her that night, along with a lot of drinking.
She's a blackout drunk who doesn't always necessarily remember what happened when she was drinking. So there's somebody dies, and there's a variety of not a huge variety, because there's only about five other characters. There's a therapist in there too, Edgar Ramirez. Justin Theroux is the ex-husband of Emily Blunt, now married to Anna.
By the way, I have to ask.
Yes.
The storyline trope of therapist sleeping with a patient.
Yeah.
Are you interested in this at all? And like, if you hear that something is like a movie's involving that.
I don't feel like that's something that I see all the time.
I just hate it.
Yeah, well, that's fair. You know what I hate that's in this movie, since you mentioned things we hate in movies. The characters in this movie entering passwords into computers, and it will show the password they're typing. When in fact, in real life, as everyone knows, when you type a password in, it doesn't show you the password. It shows asterisks.
It does.
And so I don't like it when movie characters can see their password as they're typing it. And I know why they do it. It's so that we can see what they're typing. I get that. But come on.
I also don't understand why movies create completely new password screens. I just never understood that.
Why not just use an existing operating system? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why not?
Well, because then people are like, oh, Apple paid for some product placement. You can't win on that. But so Allison Janney is a detective.
This is the first time that I haven't worshipped Allison Janney in something, I think.
Ooh, I need to add that to the list of things you worship, Allison Janney.
Wait, but I didn't. Oh,
I know,
yeah, you're
but,
right. I normally
but
do.
You generally do, is what
do.
You're
I
saying, yes.
Worship her.
Yeah, I'll add that to the list later. And me, I was mostly on board with the movie. I was not bored with it, and I was intrigued by the story because it hooked me. All right, I want to know who did what happened. Mm. I want to see how it all pans out. But then the more it went on, the more it just seemed like a tawdry sex melodrama, and it's a very inconsequential one. It all gets resolved and all comes out in the wash, and everything. No loose threads left hanging, and it's like, all right, that was fine.
Yeah.
No big shocks or surprises or anything.
No, there's a reveal that is nice. Like it made me feel good for a moment. But the main thing that I was thinking of, there was nothing good feeling wise about this story. It's a lot of negative energy. A lot of negative
energy.
Yes,
it's a very sad negative movie about really sad. Like the one's an alcoholic, the one has got a tragedy in her past, and another one's got other problems, and nobody's happy. Everyone's lying and cheating and miserable.
And it's sad in a way that you're not endeared to anybody through all of this. It's just sad.
It's misery porn. Let's watch these people be miserable and be awful to each other. I noticed this. They say the F word a lot, which is common. I noticed they use it as a verb a lot in this movie, as a literal. We were effing. We started effing. She effed. He effed. Just a lot of very direct. Like who talks like that all the time? Just using that as the word for that all the time.
Emily Blunt is giving it her all, and it's a good performance. Even though there is something, and this is in a good way. I just wish it was in a different movie, perhaps. About the drunk that she plays. There's not joy in it ever.
No.
And. Not only that, she's a bad drunk. She's an obnoxious drunk.
She's bad at being an alcoholic.
Right, right. And that's good to see on the screen because it's rare.
That's how you know she's an alcoholic, not a drunk. A drunk is someone who's fun, who's good at it. An alcoholic is someone who drinks all the time and is bad at it.
But for the most part, because of her drunkenness, what I kept feeling was, well, there's too many truths here. There's too many plausible things going on. So I'll just wait this out.
Sure.
I'll experience the mystery.
I like a mystery like that where it's not obvious who the culprit is. Like, oh, this could be one of several. All right, let's wait and see.
And it was just fine. The reveal was fine. Mm-hmm. The slight twist was fine. Everything about it was just okay.
And I will also say that when everything is resolved, the person who turns out to be at the center of it, I didn't find convincing as being that person.
Yeah.
Normally I have no problem with that person as a performer, but just in this particular role, I just didn't quite buy it.
Yeah.
It's like a picturesque train ride through the countryside, entertaining enough. All right, this is nice. And then when you get there, you're like, oh. Now, oh, crap, we're in New Jersey or something. Like, you're disappointed when you get there. But the trip was fine.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the trip. Mm. Maybe you were sitting first class. I was sitting coach. Maybe it was something like that.
Maybe.
It's a 5 out of 10 for me.
I'm B minus. I'm still, like, it's good enough to, but barely.
I would be curious. I guess I'll have to talk to my wife about, like, her perspective on the book. And, like, if it grabbed her, how it did. Like, it did feel, and just knowing it was a book as you're watching it, like that was in the back of my mind. I bet this works as a book. I bet that works as a book.
I had my guesses. I had a few guesses of specific things that I bet they went into more detail on in the book, things that they fleshed out better. But yeah, it does seem like it was. It reminded me of Gone Girl, same kind of twisty, murdery women and men thing, except that Gone Girl was much better, much more entertaining.
It's better looking. It's better looking, too.
And Gone Girl was better at being – Gone Girl was also a tawdry sex melodrama, but it was a more fun one.
Yes.
This is, like you said, just miserable and kind of pointlessly miserable.
When Gone Girl was – and again, I didn't really like Gone Girl all that much. I thought it was Fincher's weakest in quite a while. But – the thing about it was when it was all said and done, you thought about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is a movie where you're just like, everything was there. It's over. I'm moving on.
It's more like a procedural, like a TV show. Like, it's all probably, right, yeah, I'll watch that.
Like, this was probably based on an episode of Law and Order.
It seems like it. Like, it would be about the Alice and Janney character. And this was this week they decided to show it from the point of view of the suspects and the victims.
Did you have any opinion on Janney at all in this role?
She was fine. She didn't have much to do.
She really didn't have much to do. And not only that, I was just like, settle down. What's your deal? Like, why don't you, like, sit and listen?
She's trying to catch a murderer, Jeff.
Yeah, but she's not a good listener.
You know, I changed my, it's C+. I said B minus. I've changed it. C+. I just saw it, like, 45 minutes ago. I'm still refreshing.
Hey, I understand. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You can come closer to my score. It's
on Rotten Tomatoes, that's the division between fresh and rotten is B minus, C plus. Right. So that's not nothing, that decision there.
Right.
It weighs heavily on me.
No, I know.
It affects the tomato meter.
5 out of 10 versus 6 out of 10. I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's 6 is positive.
Ooh, then it's a heavy burden that weighs upon our shoulders as movie critics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if listeners appreciate that. In fact, I know listeners don't appreciate it, or they would tell us more often.
I don't know how I just made this connection, but we listeners, perk up for a second. We want to know who our youngest listener is.
Oh,
I thought about
right.
this because I'm drinking and it's
I
illegal.
Like that you had to tell our listeners to listen.
No, you know why I did that?
Why?
That's from working TV news.
Oh.
Now, listen, you're going to want to see this. Coming up next, you're going to need to pay attention.
Will your popcorn maker kill you? Our youngest listener.
We want to know who our youngest listener is. Right now, the leader in the clubhouse is Cole.
Your nephew.
My nephew.
Who is how old?
17.
All right.
Christmas Day, he will be 18.
All right. So if you're younger than that and listen to the show regularly, let us know. We want to know our old. We might as well get our oldest listener, too, while we're at it.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't know who the current leader would be. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know of anyone very old that listens. My parents don't listen.
Yeah, I don't think my mom listens anymore. She was listening for a while.
Yeah, my mom, too, for a while. But
yeah, but I mean, come on.
As in life, they get tired of hearing us talk.
Yep.
But yeah, if you feel like you're pretty old and you listen to the show, let us know.
You know what else is old, Eric?
Hmm.
The Nation.
Let's talk about The Nation's birth.
All right, sir. Ooh, was it a messy one?
Oh, very, very bloody and nasty. I think the thing that I like best about this movie is that it reclaims the title Birth of a Nation from the old silent one. The old four-hour 1915. It's long and boring and racist. Like Thanksgiving at your grandparents. Whereas this movie is not long and boring and racist, particularly.
That's right.
So there you go. Nat Turner.
Nat Turner's a name. And he was one of those slaves that could read.
We first meet him. He's 9 years old. He's a slave boy.
1809.
Something like that. He plays with the master's kid and is invited by the master's wife to – she helps him learn to read, which is a mistake. Because I mean,
now wait,
no.
It depends on your perspective.
Well, no, I mean, from their perspective, I mean, that's if they want to trace it back to what went wrong as far as the slave rebellion thing, it was teaching Nat Turner to read. Because then he also right. becomes very knowledgeable in the Bible. That's the thing. The master's wife, Penelope Ann Miller, Mrs. Turner, that's her name. She is a God-fearing Christian,
yes,
who's sincere in her beliefs. And she's like, well, if the Lord has blessed this slave boy with more smarts than the rest of that his inferior dusky race, well, then I'm duty bound to help him. And it's fascinating the mental gymnastics that people would do who were in this time who were sincere Christians, but who also sincerely thought slavery was okay.
Yes.
and that they're not hypocrites because it's sort of ingrained in them. It's how they've been taught, and they don't realize how to us that seems absurd. But so he learns the Bible, and he grows up to become Nate Parker, who is also the director and co-writer of the movie. He's comes to be in demand because he knows the Bible. He even starts preaching to congregations of slaves.
Right, with the aid of at the request of his owner, Samuel Turner, played by Armie Hammer, and
right.
His beard. They go around town, get a little bit of money, get a little bit of coin going, because Samuel's plantation is, I guess, not doing that well. We just got that for like a quick second, yeah. But then it's like, oh, okay, he's got money struggles. This can be Nat. It can be his golden ticket. Got it.
Right.
We also have a couple of other characters that are just kind of looming, like Jackie Earle Haley as super standard racist guy. And as the movie goes, the thing that I'm waiting for, mm-hmm. and the thing that this movie does very well, is the buildup for when Nat has had enough.
Yes.
Because you know, based on it, I haven't seen 1 second of any preview or anything like that. You know there's an uprising coming. Otherwise, sure. You wouldn't be sitting and watching this movie.
We're not watching slavery just for the fun of it.
Right. But what you have during this time is kind of a really basic sweet romance that fits the time period very well and is unique in the sense that, like Nat falls in love with somebody that he only gets to see a few seconds on occasion every once in a while, and he doesn't know when because they're both slaves. And I found all of that very interesting. Like, mm-hmm. how do you court under those circumstances?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you court without text messages.
This is what I'm saying.
Let alone under the oppression of slavery.
Like, 2 minutes of texting is, like, more than their entire courtship.
Right, yeah, yeah. I don't know how anybody fell in love in those days.
But they did.
And good for them.
Yep, good for them.
He starts preaching more, and he's preaching to the congregation of slaves, becomes a spiritual leader, and then even white people are seeking him out for spiritual guidance. But as the more that he sees slavery's atrocities, the less he can ignore the parts of the Bible that would seem to be against slavery in favor of the parts that he's been quoting in its defense.
Right. It's getting impossible for him to turn a blind eye.
There's that great scene where he and the white preacher have an argument about slavery where they're just quoting Bible verses back and forth to each other.
Yes.
Which is amazing. It's just electric.
With some temper thrown in,
yes.
Thankfully, yes. Deservedly.
And I think that's amazing. And it, again, goes back to how I'm fascinated by this, by the Penelope Ann Miller character, how just because she believes that blacks are inferior doesn't mean – she doesn't take that as excuse to treat them meanly.
Right.
Which would be the true – that would be the Christian attitude, that even someone who is inferior to you, you'll still be nice to them.
And for the record, you are definitely going to see a lot of mistreatment of slaves in this film.
Although I didn't feel like the movie dwelled too much on that. Like it's certainly not 12 Years a Slave. Like it felt like the movie didn't need to wallow in the specifics in order to convince us that slavery was awful. Like it sort of assumes that we get it. But yeah, it does show us certainly some bad stuff.
And there's some flaws with the direction in general. Like there's a moment of Nat thinking hard, and what does he do? He flashes back to everything that we've seen that was wrong in the movie, and it's just like, come on, buddy, I just watched that with you. I know this journey that you're on.
I think the whole first half of the movie is very well-intentioned and okay, but it sometimes seems kind of meandering, and it kind of has this TV movie look to it, kind of cheap-looking.
Yes.
But then the last 30 minutes then, when it all busts
out.
Here's
the weird thing about the last 30 minutes.
Hmm.
Part of me felt like I was almost watching a dream sequence in the sense that it all felt like it was happening too quickly for that pacing that was established, for the tone and the journey that I thought I was going on. It felt like it kept wrapping up when I didn't expect, like when I thought it was going to really get going, it was wrapping up. And I was really surprised by that.
I mean, I feel like when the uprising begins, I think that last 30 minutes or close to it. I mean, I feel like it's a chunk of the film.
No, but again, for some reason, I was under the impression, I guess in a nice way, I didn't see where the movie was going.
Mm.
And in a bad way, it felt like, well, wait, this is really good stuff. Let's slow down and explore this more. Even tiny things like like there was one preaching moment, because again, everybody listening, you have to realize that white owners were also around for a lot of Nat's preaching.
Right.
But like his dynamic as a leader became assumed when I wanted it to keep being proven in a good way, in a juicy way, enjoying the foundations of his hope and care for everybody. I wanted to be rebel roused even more, as opposed to, oh, okay, got it. You already convinced these people and here we go. Something. There was some meat missing like three-fourths of the way through that surprised me. It didn't feel like I got a full meal.
Fair enough. I was the last chunk, I think, was just horrific and stirring and righteous. It's a good catharsis after that 90 minutes of, like you said, of things being built up and you're waiting for this thing to go. It's not a great movie. It's got I think really important messages, and it's a good movie, but it's unremarkable as a film.
It has moments.
Yeah,
like you could pluck out and be swept away by 10 minutes easy. Mm-hmm. Even just like the singing of Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Yeah.
Like those things, it just like it stirs within you and you're captivated and you're just like wanting a better life and revenge and everything.
Right.
But it does feel like you're just getting some really good moments.
Yeah. I give it a B.
I'm a 7 out of 10.
All right. I feel like this is the story. Nat Turner's Rebellion is something that you remember from like grade school history class or whatever.
No.
At least the term. I know the term Nat Turner's Rebellion. I couldn't have told you much about it, but the name was familiar.
Okay.
But it's amazing that there haven't been more movies about it. Not amazing, I guess. It's not a surprise, but it's a shame that this is a story that should be told more, and I'm glad that it's being told. Even if the movie's not great, it's a step in the right direction. And like more stories like this ought to be told.
Yes. And especially like yes, in the schools and everything, of course.
I give the movie a B. I give Slavery an F.
Not a fan.
Not a fan of slavery.
All slavery or just America's version of
it? Not the way that I've seen it. I have not seen a good version of slavery. I'm open to the possibility. Now, something else that happens in this movie, there's rape. Some of the slaves get raped in this movie.
There is rape.
And coincidentally, Nate Parker, who wrote and directed the movie, he and the co-writer, actually, when they were in college, were accused of rape. And this has come up last couple of months.
Yeah, it was something that was public record years ago, but nobody cared.
Nobody paid attention.
This,
yeah,
right?
Nate Parker has been an actor. He's been in a few movies, but yeah, he hadn't been high enough profile for it to matter. And then he makes this very high profile movie, a movie that also happens to have a rape in it, which adds to the uncomfortableness. And for people who don't know, Parker was. It was in 1999. So it was Nate Parker and Gene Celestin. They were college freshmen, I think, 18 years old. And they were accused of rape. They were on trial. Neither of them testified. The trial was in 2001. Parker was acquitted. The other guy was convicted on a sexual assault, but it was overturned and because he had a bad jury, and then he was never retried. So they just sort of went away. But then the victim committed suicide several years later.
Yes.
And when this all first came up, Parker was talking about, you know, I've got a wife, I've got five daughters, trying to sort of present himself as having reformed. It was a long time ago. You know, I regret. For his part, he said that he had had consensual sex with this girl before, and he insisted that this encounter was also consensual. He and the other guy both said it was consensual. But anyway, you're kind of sort of inclined to, I mean, that's awful, but it was a long time ago and you were young, and I mean, what are you supposed to, are you supposed to like never do anything again because you made this one mistake? Like, what, where's the line? For me, it all comes down to how remorseful a person is about the things that they've done wrong, and that's where he has sort of begun to lose me.
It seems like he's trying to figure this out as opposed to something that he's thought about before. Like it seems like this is a work
right.
in progress, and that's where you get this awful thing of like, is this PR, is this the biz, is this
right.
media, is this like what is like, I don't know, I don't feel his feelings, like whatever they are, I don't know them, I don't feel them. I know sexual assault, everything about it is devastating,
right?
I don't know who the heck did what. Obviously, this woman felt horrific about it on some level.
Right. I mean, that's
and on another level. Like and then to see like kind of two moments on the screen, it's hard to distance yourself from. Well, what is Nate Parker doing here?
Well, especially since the rape. I can't remember if there's more than one rape in the movie, but one anyway motivates Nate Parker's character.
Right.
Partly to avenge that rape. And that You could spend a lot of time unpacking the psychology of that.
That's the weird thing. That's the next level of this movie.
The most recent thing is where he's saying that he said, here's the quote, "I was falsely accused, I was proven innocent, and I'm not going to apologize for that." The fact that she committed suicide is where I feel like even if I'm sure that I did nothing wrong, you still at least express sympathy to the family, and I regret any part that my relationship with her may have played in that, or something.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And clearly, even if he doesn't think he raped her, clearly she was traumatized by it, and clearly she believed that it was that she had been raped,
right.
and acted on
to
that.
Me,
and,
I just, oh god.
Ugh. For me, I'm not usually big on like boycotts of movies, but I would not blame someone for not wanting to see this movie because of the off the screen stuff, and usually. You know, everyone's kind of got their own line of where the line is of where you separate the art from the artist. And I wouldn't blame anyone for wanting to just sort of skip this one because of the ickiness behind the scenes.
I agree with that. I'm very similar in the sense that like I want distance from movie and the life of whoever mm-hmm. created movie. That's ideally what I want. I just want to look at the art.
Right, right.
But it was hard in this situation.
Yeah, it's interesting that you saw it after knowing this, because I saw it at Sundance where mm-hmm. nobody knew any of this stuff yet. That's interesting. Right. I wonder how that would be to see it with this already in your head.
Because, I mean, obviously I didn't I'm somebody that I don't want to know much about a movie. I didn't want to know a lot about Nate Parker's actual situation with this, but right. I read up on it enough, and it was just kind of surprising to see it in the movie then.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing. I was like, oh, this is why it matters.
Right.
As
right.
much as it does.
Yeah.
Because yeah. that's the thing that's really weird is you never know why something is grabbed onto in the media as much as it is. This one, it's kind of obvious why it had legs because
right.
he's using sexual abuse in a story, like to tell a story, to motivate a character.
Especially worth pointing out that the rape in the movie is fictional. It didn't happen in history. That's we forgot to mention. Mm. That's a crucial point.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, someone who was convicted and tried of rape and then makes up a rape for the movie, obviously that's not a coincidence. You can't just dismiss that as, oh, well, sure, that's a thing that happens. Like, there's something to that.
Yeah.
And, the movie's not great enough for me to say, well, even if you're bothered by it, suck it up and watch it because it's great. You got to see it. It's not that great. And so, yeah, you're not missing much if you are put off by the extracurricular activities of the director.
Agreed.
It's a crappy situation all the way around for everyone. I feel sympathy for him in the sense that this is something that he thought was behind him, and that in right or wrong, he thought that he had dealt with it completely and put it behind him.
Right. In his perspective, he was not foreseeing this issue.
Yeah. And then for it to come up, and then, you know, it's the most exciting part of his life. He's sold this movie at Sundance for almost, it was almost a record amount of money. It was $17.5
right.
million. And then it all comes back, and he's got to work it out, you know, in public, which makes it even harder to work it all out. So
mm-hmm.
I feel for the guy, but he's not handling it well. And also, he's a rapist, apparently.
Right.
Alleged rapist.
Yeah.
We're not the news. We don't have to say alleged.
That's true.
Let's quit talking about that. Ugh.
Yeesh.
Let's talk about more pleasant things, like women being murdered. Oh, we already did that movie. Bad news all around, everywhere. Here's what we want to talk about, guys and ladies, gals, people, listeners. As you may have noticed, last week we've been making some changes to the show.
Changes.
Mm-hmm. We have put Question of the Week in a box in the attic. We know where it is.
Occasionally blow the dust off the top and open it back up.
We didn't like put it way in the back behind the Christmas decorations. Like it's near the front. We know where to get it if we need it.
That's right.
But here's why. Here's my perspective on the question of the week. And this is what we need your help with here. For me, I often was not personally interested in the question of the week. I'm sure I did a great job hiding that on the show. I'm sure I did a terrific job feigning interest. And it's not that there's nothing wrong with the question, but usually if it was a question like, for example, around Thanksgiving, we'll do a, you know, what was a great eating scene in a movie? And I'd be able to think of a few and name a few, but I don't have any strong opinions on the subject.
There's no passion involved.
Right, right. So it's just sort of a time killer. And that's what we realized. We don't need to kill time. We don't need to do that.
Yeah, we're not like selling something for our hour fill.
Right, nor do we have an hour time slot that we have to fill like we did when we started the show, and which was sort of ingrained in our heads. So now we're just going to wait till we have, you know, an interesting idea for a question of the week or a discussion topic or something. And so that's where we want your guys' help. And you guys have been very great in the past at giving us ideas for questions of the week and whatnot. And now we're really calling upon you for discussion topics. It can be ethical kind of questions relating to the movies or philosophical questions. It could be, I guess, the what's your favorite movie where this happens? Your favorite this kind of a scene in a movie? I feel like we've exhausted that. Probably.
Maybe.
Maybe you'll surprise us and come up with some new angle we haven't thought of before. But I feel like we've done most of those. But we need discussion topics because we would like to interact with you, the listeners. We would like to hear feedback from you. Like to hear your answers and your thoughts on questions. So if you can think of a question that would produce some interesting, thoughtful discussion, by all means, email us, Facebook us, Twitter us, tell us, and we can incorporate that into the show.
And it's not just the idea of, well, here's a movie question, blah, blah, blah. Again, we like the idea of talking a little bit about ourselves on occasion.
We can also, yeah, we can use more questions about just, you have questions for us to answer, that works, or questions
right.
for everyone to answer, to discuss.
Ideas to explore, we're cool mm-hmm. with all of that. Mm-hmm. What we're saying right now is we are ready for this show to evolve.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'd like to have your help doing it because you've been nice enough to listen.
Been doing the show for like 6 years, more than 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of you have been listening from the beginning or almost the beginning. And we're very glad for that. So if you have suggestions, if you have general suggestions for the show, things you'd like to hear more of or less of, or things that you don't like when we do that, or you do like when we do that other thing, tell us, please. It's hard doing a podcast where there's not immediate feedback. There's not an audience.
That's right.
So we can't tell when you're getting bored. We can't tell when you're tuning out. We don't know what you're laughing at or what you think is annoying. We just kind of have to guess. And so by all means, please give us, you know, be nice about it. Don't be mean. Don't be jerks. but if you have specific feedback about things you would like to hear more of or less of on the show, or new ideas for things that you'd like us to do, by all means, we're all ears. We're literally all ears.
Well.
You are.
Yeah. Go to moviebs.com. You'll find our email. You'll find our Facebook. You'll find our Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us however you want to talk to us. But talk to us.
By all means, talk to us like Dogcat is talking to me now.
Yeah,
Dogcat. Now he stopped. He wants to play. It's not playtime! You know what I should do? I should start yelling at my cat like a drunken husband.
Mm.
Like we're a drunken couple that hates each other. Like, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
What you'll have to do to truly sell it,
mm-hmm.
and you can just borrow the glass from me, you have to fill up a glass with bourbon.
Yeah, the little bourbon glass, yeah.
But the nice thing is, you won't drink it.
Right.
It'll always be just like one third full, so it can slosh, but not too much, because you don't want to like spill a lot. A
couple of fingers of bourbon in there.
Two fingers, yeah.
Two fingers, yeah. That's a good idea. Just as a prop. I would definitely get into character better if I had a prop.
Yep.
To hold. That's true. I'll have to look into that. Now, when your listeners last heard from us, we were at Fantastic Fest. I was about to leave. Well, we were about to do the Satanic Panic Room, and then I was going to leave town. You, Jeff, stuck around through the bitter end.
Bitter end, as I typically always do with this festival, mainly because my wife's family is nice enough to take care of my boys while I'm doing the festival in Austin, Texas. So then I stick around.
Sort
and
of
I'm
a
like,
vacation
look,
for you.
Look, I'm here hanging out with you guys too, which I thankfully really like them all.
They're not listening. You can be honest.
They might be listening.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I love them, too. They're great. You wish Fantastic Fest lasted 3 weeks.
Because of freedom?
Well, yeah. It's kind of a vacation for you.
It is.
Whereas
very close.
I find that about 5 days, 5 or 6 days is plenty. But briefly, mention the movies you saw after I left and see if I get jealous.
Handmaiden, which you saw as
I already
well.
Said
and,
yes.
And thankfully, we'll get to talk about that in the future because it's worth talking about in the future.
We will review that when it comes to theaters, yeah.
My entire high school sinking into a sea.
That's one of the ones you'd been looking forward to, animated. And Jason Schwartzman was the voice.
Yep, and a couple other notables. It's a very weird animation style. It's grasping at things occasionally, but it's interesting. I don't know.
All right.
The Invisible Guest. Did you see that one?
Mm-mm, no.
This is a.
How could I see him? He's invisible.
I'm really curious where this movie ends up. So, like, we'll talk about it one day, hopefully. Otherwise, maybe we won't. It evolves as it's a conversation between a lawyer and her client.
All right.
And it keeps getting bigger and deeper as far as, now, who did what? Whose perspective are we listening to? It's a nice keep-you-guessing kind of movie.
All right.
There's also A Monster Calls.
I'm looking forward to seeing that, A Monster Calls. That comes out this fall.
I didn't want to because I started the festival bawling my little head off with Arrival.
Arrival, yeah.
And I was like, okay, Monster Calls, I get it. it's not working.
Oh, yeah?
But then it does work. Mm-hmm. Whether you want it or not. And then I also saw they showed Westworld and gave me a free meal.
Westworld, HBO, the new HBO show. Yeah.
HBO, it was one of those things where you're like, oh, a TV show is giving me something? Well, this is great because I don't care. I don't review TV shows. So I ate some sort of cornbread meat something or other.
Some kind of like Old West thing. Old West food. All right.
Yep. And the show's good. We'll see.
I like the show. I watched it the other night on HBO. I like it.
Did you have the worry that I had with Westworld? This is a really cool world. Who do I care about?
Well, I've only seen the one episode, but yeah, that is a concern that we may not care about man-made, manufactured sex robots.
Right. The one that's intriguing me the most, as is supposed to be, I think, is Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Okay, good. See, I was worried you would just have James Marsden blinders on.
No, I that's fair. That's a fair guess. But no, he's not very interesting yet. Ed Harris is very interesting.
And then I saw Colossal.
The new Nacho Vigalondo movie with, who is it? It's not Natalie Portman.
Anne Hathaway. Jason Sudeikis.
Mm-hmm.
And giant monster.
Godzilla or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
But that's in Korea, and they're hanging out in the States. It's weird. It is a weird movie that I look forward to seeing again to see how I feel about it.
All right.
Because there's some cool stuff, but like I don't know if it worked. I have to find out.
That's one of the main ones that I was sorry to miss. Now, before I left, we did the Satanic Panic Room, and this was fun. There was no actual Satan worship involved. I should clarify.
Yeah.
It's just, it was the theme. The theme was it, but it's just one of those. There's a new trend now, a new fad. These escape rooms, these puzzle rooms.
I recommend the puzzle room if you're not aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
Getting your friends together and doing this is a creative, worthwhile endeavor, even though sometimes it costs upwards of like $30 a person. Just go ahead and do it once to see how you feel
about
it.
Find a Groupon. You find Groupons for some of them. We got at least two places I know of in Portland, and they're everywhere now, popping up everywhere. And this one, I guess, is a local Austin group that does this, and they turned one of the draft houses, karaoke rooms, into the escape room. And it was us two. You had to have teams of four. It was us two, and then Neil Miller and Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects.
Neither one of them, I would say, held us back.
No. No, you would think that they would, being movie bloggers.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
No. They did not hold us back. And in fact, we had 45 minutes to solve it and get out. We got out with 20 seconds to spare and without ever asking for any clues, any help.
We heard about other people asking for help.
Yeah, Jermaine Lucier.
Mm-hmm.
You were allowed to ask for as much help as you wanted to, apparently.
Apparently, you could just keep asking questions.
Yeah, and we sort of forgot about it, but we also never really got stumped long enough to where we just felt, oh, we're stuck. We've got to ask for help. I feel like we never stumped for very long. And it was fun. We started out being locked in the dark. So we had to find the keys to our
various
chains.
You guys were shackled. I was just in a cage.
You were in a cage. I was shackled to something. I had to find keys and then figure out puzzles and clues and everything, and it was very, very fun. It was clever how they do it. I really enjoy those things.
A little thing, like a warning, perhaps. Don't have to pee and then go to the panic room. Just in general, it doesn't make the experience relaxing.
No,
in fact, it increases the intensity.
Yeah, there's no bathroom in the panic room. Although, really, any room's a bathroom if you pee in it.
I don't think so.
But that was fun, and I'm glad we did that. Glad we did that. And we did. You and I and some of our friends in Portland did one that was, did it have a theme?
World War II, man.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We were fighting the Nazis, and we lost, didn't we? Did we lose? I feel like we...
I don't think we lost.
We did. I can't remember now.
No, we solved it.
Did we defeat the Nazis?
Yes.
Well, good for us. Then I did another one with some other friends here in Portland. It was Sherlock Holmes themed. Also very fun.
Did you win?
I don't remember.
It's funny because that would be the, like, you know,
be like the one thing that you would remember. I would remember. I remember it was fun. It was fun solving the puzzles, and yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Anyway, that was fun. We had a good time as always at Fantastic Fest in Austin.
Can't wait for next year. Well, is it coming up soon? Fantastic Fest?
Like 51 weeks. Yeah, sorry.
Wow.
Let's talk about some DVD releases out on home video this week and last week.
You people might need some movies that you're like, oh, hey, that movie's available. I should probably watch it.
I'm telling you right now, there's a few on this list that are exactly the reason we brought back this segment. Movies where maybe you forgot they existed, and I want to be like, oh, you should see this now that it's on DVD. For example, The Meddler. Did you ever see The Meddler?
Didn't see The Meddler.
Hey, it's on DVD now. You should watch it.
I have a screener of The Meddler. I'm looking forward to watching The Meddler. And then we'll find out if I believe you gave it a B+.
Yes, it would
be BS
approved if you give it an 8 or higher. Yeah.
It might be. We'll find out.
The Meddler is Susan Sarandon as a mom who's got nothing to do but to interfere in her daughter's life. Very funny and sweet. It'll make you love your mom and delightful.
Finally.
But they finally found what'll do it. So yeah, see The Meddler. You'll enjoy that.
And then you're about to go like, it's only a few bucks. Let's watch Money Monster. Don't.
No.
Don't watch it. And I don't say it's the worst. It's not the worst thing ever. It's just that it's filling a void with, it's flavorless. It's flavorless. Ignore it.
And it's even got George Clooney and Julia Roberts and some other people. And no, yeah, it's about a financial TV show, and the Money Monster guy on the show would probably tell you, don't spend money on Money Monster.
That's true. While that is flavorless, the aroma is coming from this movie, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Hunt for the Wilder People, yes.
Both of us
one.
Were charmed by this movie. It has charm, even though there's a slight biting sense of humor too, thanks to Sam Neill being a curmudgeon.
It's got kind of a mean streak to the humor, which I still wonder if that's a cultural thing, a New Zealand thing, that maybe that's the sense of humor. But I thought Hunt for the Wilder People was just delightful and funny. Sam Neill and a kid out in the wilderness evading Child Protective Services, an odd couple situation. Really, really funny and kind of sweet in its way. And then Swiss Army Man.
I'm looking forward to a rewatch on Swiss Army Man. I gave it an 8,
mm-hmm.
and I think a second watch is going to change that. Like it
gotta
was
make it, gotta
I
make it go up or down.
That's the thing. Oh. I don't know yet, but I believe it will change it. I don't know.
I gave that a B+ at the time. Also interested to rewatch it, and that's another good example of a movie that you probably have heard about from us or other people. It's been sort of one of the indie darlings this year, but maybe didn't get around to seeing it. So now check it out, Swiss Army Man.
I think I might give the wife the 10-minute test on that one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Let me know how that goes. You'll definitely know in 10 minutes.
Yep.
And then also X-Men Apocalypse, which was generic, mediocre.
Yeah, it's another superhero movie, and I didn't think it wasn't bad. It was just another one. Put it in the pile.
The Purge, Election Year, which basically a documentary at this point.
I promise you this. I'm never going to sit through this movie.
All right.
I didn't see it. There's just zero chance I will ever find time to watch Purge Election Year.
There's no reason that you would. And then Complete Unknown, which we both liked, okay, with Rachel Weisz and Michael Shannon. Just a few weeks ago, we reviewed that.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah, Complete Unknown. If that's at the Red Box, a couple of grown-ups want something, you know, for grown-ups to watch and talk about, be a good movie. There you go. Some things you can watch that aren't in the theaters. And that brings us to the end of episode 330 of Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. What did we learn today? We learned that the girl on the train, just keep on riding, girl on the train. Just not your stop. Keep going.
Keep going.
Not bad, but yeah.
Meh.
And then Birth of a Nation is good, but it's got some baggage, and it's understandable if you want to have nothing to do with it, which is unfortunate because it does have really good messages. If you can separate the rape from the racism, it's got really good things to say and an important story to be told, but it's sort of got the baggage of the people who made it. I hope people – what if people quit listening to our show because of the thing they find out about us?
There's nothing to find out.
Well, you'd think.
I'm a saltine cracker and you're a Triscuit.
Pretty boring past, do you think, both of us? You don't know.
So.
We've only known each other for, you know, a few years. I don't know what you did before that. You don't know what I did before that.
You're calling this a few?
I couldn't think of the number. Since 2008. 8 years. We've only known each other several years.
Yeah.
Just saying. You don't know what I did in my 20s. I don't know what I did in my 20s. It's not true. I kept a journal. I don't know why I tried to sound cool by lying. Like, I don't remember my 20s. I remember every minute of my 20s.
I have phases in my life that are a haze.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic Fest always ages me. Fantastic Fest lasts a week, and it ages me about 4 weeks.
Fantastic Fest might be the leader in the clubhouse of coming home and just being like, oh yeah, the grind.
Back to real
it
life.
It might be for me.
Please send us suggestions or feedback on the show. Sincerely, we do want to hear your suggestions and ideas, either specific suggestions for discussion topics or more general things of what you'd like to see in the show. We want to hear. And so that's it. Until next week for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.
He learned to read. And that was, this is, let's go back.